Okay, this is March 31st, interviewing Lorraine Rothman, tape 2.
Well, okay, we were talking about sexual relations with Al. That was the glue that held our relationship together for many, many years. He was always a very sensitive lover, and I always enjoyed sex with him. And it just always seemed to be good, except for those times that the kids were little. And there was no time, or, you know, we were exhausted, which is a common problem. As our relationship began to deteriorate, even though our personal relationship deteriorated, the sex was still okay. At least for him, it was okay. For me, it was okay. It was not as rich as it could have been emotionally, because I was just basically unsatisfied with the social, although the sex was good. You know, the physical was good. But also, I was going through this thing of knowing that I couldn't let my unhappiness affect the sexual life, because after all, it would interfere with his enjoyment. And if his enjoyment was interfered with, then I would be causing trouble. You know, it's the thing we're taught as women. So, anyway, it could have been better as far as the emotional end of it for me, as it had been many years before. The physical was always good. Okay. Birth control was a problem more so after Teresa was born, because by then we had decided, well, you know, three's a nice size family. And so I was using the diaphragm, which I hated, because the upper rim on the closest to the outside of the body, which fits behind the pubic bone, interferes with very sensitive tissue. And I would have better orgasms without a diaphragm. And that's, we have later learned, more recently learned, that it sits on the urethral sponge. And that's the area that, I don't know whether you're familiar with the G-spot.
Mm-hmm.
That's the G-spot where some women find
right on it.
Sits right on it, where some women find that, you know, it's pretty good. Well, anyway, I didn't like the diaphragm for that reason, although I didn't know why at the time. But I used it because, you know, I didn't want to get pregnant again. And he would sometimes use condoms. And then, there, in like around 1966, we began to have conflict over not wanting to get pregnant. And he came home with the idea of, why should I get an IUD? And I didn't want an IUD. I didn't want anything in my body. I did not take the birth control pill because I'm asthmatic and I don't take drugs. I don't know what it would do to my body. And I didn't want anything foreign in my body. And he said, no. People at school have told him it's real good. There are students that he has that use it and they really like it. Da-da-da-da-da. And I said, okay, I'll try it. And I did not. I mean, I went along only because he wanted me to wear it. And we went to Kaiser. He went with me. He stood down at the doctor's end where my legs were, not near me, where he should have been supportive of me. The IUD went in. It was extremely painful.
How long did it
take? It was quick, but it was very, very painful, extremely painful. And I used it for about 7 months. I hated every minute of it because I could feel it in my uterus. My secretions, my secretions were heavier. On periods, my extremely crampy. I bled heavier, and I didn't like the odor that came out of my vagina. And on the 7th month, I developed a low-grade infection, which they had not forewarned me of. They weren't telling women about possibility of infection. And it was me who figured out something was wrong. I called the doctors. Oh, no, everything is fine. It's, you know, if you don't feel better, come in, we'll get you checked. And I went in to the gynecologist to have him check the IUD because I put it together. I was the one who had to say, do you think there's an association? And the guy, and I remember the doctor said, well, there could be, but don't worry about it. We'll give you antibiotics. We don't have to take it out. And I said, take it out. Because I cannot afford to get sick. I cannot afford to get an infection as an asthmatic. I cannot afford an infection. I said, take it out. And he said, no, you can leave it in. I said, take it out. I had to fight with him to take the damn thing out. He removed it, and I had immediate relief. He was very angry with me, and he says to me, right on the table, with all the pain during removal, now what are you going to use? And I got dressed. I went into his office, and he says, here, I'll write you a prescription for the birth control pill. And I said, I'm not going to take the birth control pill. I'm asthmatic. I don't know what it does. I don't take drugs, unless I absolutely have to. And he was serious, just serious with me. You're irresponsible, you're going to get pregnant, blah, blah, blah. And I walked away. This was not before Andrea was born. This was after Andrea was born. Okay? After Andrea was born. Andrea came 6 years after Teresa. And she was surprised.
So you teach Teresa and Andrea,
you use the
condom and the diaphragm.
Right. Condom and diaphragm. And
with
success. Right, with success. And then I had caught a very bad cold. My cycle went off, and that's when I got pregnant with Andrea. Okay. We thought about abortion, and we decided, no, why not? Let's have another kid. And it was after Andrea that I wanted no more children. That's when our relationship really began to... real. And so I went IUD, had that removed. The doctor got furious at me. And that's when Alan and I sat down and we had a little bit more discussion. Alan said, okay, I'll get a vasectomy. So I was concerned for him. I was more concerned than he was. Still thinking in those terms, oh, the poor man, the poor man, the poor man. He got a vasectomy. It took me a good 3 months after the vasectomy to not waken in the middle of the night and I missed my period. I mean, that's how much sex is a part of our lives, part of our total lives of reproduction. Not fun. And it should be fun.
You've always got
fear. Always got fear. And once I got used to the idea, I didn't have to worry about pregnancy anymore. Our sex life dramatically improved. It was just great. Just wonderful. Great. I recommend it for everybody. No, just for women who, you know, I mean, it's God, how closely tied we are to fear of pregnancy. So, and he was born in politics. I had no sense of politics. Although I may read the newspaper, may have read the newspaper, may have read magazines and all, I had no sense of how things worked at all. And when Israel was established as a state, I didn't have any particular feelings one way or the other, other than knowing that, hey, it's a good thing maybe, because Jews were getting kicked out of all the countries anyway. And my father always said, well, we should have our own country, then there won't be any anti-Semitism, which we know is bullshit. Absolutely incorrect. And but that's what Jewish people were told in order to be able to support it. And when I belonged to the Jewish group in Maryland, it was for social purposes, to meet other people and maybe work on common projects. I always thought in terms of, if I do anything, I work for something that for the good of people in the United States, which is what we did a lot of. I didn't like the activities that would support activities in Israel because I had this feeling that people in Israel should work on their own problems. It shouldn't come from people who don't even know what's going on over there. That just didn't seem right. And I didn't have the energy, I didn't have the resources to be able to potentially give it away to another country, other people I don't even know. So if that's a level of conscious, political consciousness, I have that much. But otherwise, I voted Democratic, but I didn't know anything about anybody. You know, I just,
what about in the '50s? Were you aware of McCarthyism and all that? How did that affect you?
That was a very frightening time because I had grown up in Hollywood, and I knew Hollywood to be really nice, liberal people, mm-hmm. and the McCarthyism that I saw over television and read in the newspaper was very, very frightening. That somebody could, you know, destroy people's lives by just, you know, calling them a communist, just labeling them a communist. And the whole issue of communism, I had been taught to have negative feelings about communism, but I didn't know anything about it. So I don't think I agreed with McCarthy because he was attacking the community that I had grown up in. It didn't make any sense to me. But at the same time, I was raised with this idea that something wrong with communism. It wasn't until I began to read more as an adult, and when I actually joined the self-help movement in 1971, where our group would discuss a lot of this, and then we would make an effort to bring more knowledgeable people in and get different opinions, pro and con, where we began to really struggle with, grapple with the issues, that I began to get a much better political understanding of the way things seem to work.
Okay, tell me about the meeting that Cal
State Bulletin. I wanted to go up to meet with this group that planned this 1-hour meeting called Women's Liberation, because I was a woman, I was unhappy, and I figured here was maybe they'd be able to get some answers for me, or at least I'd find other women of like mind, so I didn't have to feel quite so isolated. And it was primarily students. There must have been about 25 people in the room. There were a couple of women who were professors. One of the women actually came over from Fullerton College. She taught at Fullerton College. And for that 1 hour, women just shared their experiences. And it was an unstructured meeting with no real purpose other than, and I think it's the very first meeting that they ever had, just women just talking about problems at school, harassment at school, harassment in their personal lives, problems in their personal lives, just women's issues on a very basic level without any analysis. And I began to feel much better, at least knowing that I'm a mother at home, but, you know, it seems to be a universal problem. And at the end of the meeting, the professor from Fullerton College came over to me and said that if I was interested in meeting with a women's liberation group with women more my own age, with my own background, and mothers, and housewives, divorces, whatever, you know, she could give me the name of the group and where they're meeting. And I said, yeah, I would be interested. Well, that was the National Organization for Women, which was just getting off the ground in Orange County. And it was at a woman's house who's like 6 blocks away from here in the evening, which was something like a week later or 2 weeks later. And Shirley Bernard, the woman who spoke to me, was regional facilitator for the National Organization for Women. She helped organize the group. And I decided I was going to go to that meeting. Meanwhile, it's at night, not in the middle of the day when the kids are at school, and I could get a neighbor to watch one of the other kids. Okay. At night, Al might be home, but I need child care. What am I going to do? I don't want him to even know I'm going. What do I do? And I never went out at night without him.
You know yourself.
He didn't know. I didn't go anywhere without him. I always ate at home. I never took myself to lunch. I never went to lunch with anybody else. And I just had no reason to leave the house. And so comes time for the meeting, and he is home. And day before, I said, there's a meeting that I want to go to, the women's group, tomorrow night. Would you please watch the kids? He said, sure, no problem. And I went up to Virginia Bradfish's apartment on Placentia Avenue, and terribly afraid, just loaded with all kinds of fear.
What were you afraid of?
Very vulnerable. I was going into a group of women who were dissatisfied, and I'm dissatisfied. I don't have a right to be dissatisfied. And, you know, maybe the whole thing is going to backfire on me, and they're going to tell me, what right do you have to be dissatisfied? You know, I don't know. Anyway, this is in 68, 69, and there's about 8 women. And some were in the process of divorce, a couple of them were divorced, others were still living with their husbands, some had kids, very engaged. But they were all women I could identify with. And it was more structured, and I was really comfortable with the group. I began to make some friends. I had continued to meet with these women after that, and I began to take an active role. I became vice president or chairwoman of membership or something. I got involved in leadership. Got to be good friends with the women whose house we met at, and continued to work in that now chapter, primarily on reproductive rights, and went to demonstrations. We picketed Orange County Medical Center, which is now UC Irvine Medical Center, because the doctors, it was the only facility in Orange County that would provide abortion for indigent women, albeit restrictive abortion. Nevertheless, you know, poor women could get their abortions. And because it was a teaching school, the doctors were all interns, and they decided they weren't going to do any more abortions because it was boring. They wanted to learn to do other services. So we went down to picket. And so I became more involved in women's issues.
How did it affect the home life?
Al was delighted, first of all. Al, because Al had already reached tenure, and his time was more flexible. We were 2 blocks away from school. He was able to come home more in the daytime. Sex in the afternoon was great. Kids were at school. The youngest one was in preschool, and life was a lot easier. And he was home more to watch the kids. When our oldest boy Murray turned 7 and was old enough for Boy Scouts, 7 or 8. He was old enough for Boy Scouts. Al became active in Boy Scouts. He was a Boy Scout when he was a boy and loved it. And I became a Boy Scout leader or a Cub Scout leader. I helped organize Cub Scout packs in the elementary school district in Fullerton, working with the Boy Scout Council. When Teresa was old enough for Girl Scouts, I formed the Girl Scout troop. I also worked with council to organize Girl Scout troops sponsored by the City of Fullerton's elementary schools. I also became a summer Girl Scout camp director. I became very active. Well, let's see. Murray was born in 56, and so it was 63. We moved in 64 here. So it was in 1964, it was from then on. So I was becoming more active with my children's activities, and it revolved around scouting. And as an active leader, we did a lot of outdoor activities, it was great. I took leadership roles. It was interesting, looking back on it now, I just took leadership roles, probably because I was a teacher, and it was part and parcel. But anyway, so in 68-69, I became active in NOW, and Al was very supportive because he saw that I came home happier. He saw something was happening. And he also felt that I needed to have more that would be just me, and was very supportive of that. In 1970, I was very active by 1970. By 1971, I had heard about a group I heard about a meeting that was being formed, that was being called in Los Angeles for women who were very frustrated over abortion rights, and how we were not making any headway, and that the group that the meeting was specifically to hammer out what's wrong, what can we do to make some changes. And I attended that first meeting, which was organized by Carol Downer at the Women's Bookstore in Venice, California. And that's where she introduced self-help, plastic vaginal speculum, and menstrual, and the cut. She introduced suction abortion, which I saw as did all of us, a great potential for us maybe to learn to do our own abortion. And that first meeting, I realized we needed our own kit. And I came back the second meeting with the menstrual extraction kit.
You're from Holly. What was suction abortion? Like, where did she get that
at? She had, Carol had done the very thing that the rest of us never did, which was, hey, what's abortion? I may have had one, but I don't know what it is. I don't know what, I know what one technique is over another. And she decided she was going to find out what a good abortion was, what a bad abortion was. She was going to see herself. And she wanted to see how women were treated. She wanted to, you know, she wanted to demystify it and learn. And she had been able to get into an illegal abortion clinic on Santa Monica Boulevard, Harvey Carman's clinic. And he was using a flexible Starlock device that was rounded on the end and had two little openings and was fairly narrow. He used a 6-millimeter cannula. And it was, he used the cannula directly attached to a 50cc syringe, plastic disposable syringe, that he adapted so that it would hold tight. And using the syringe to produce the suction, he would be able to evacuate the contents of the uterus. And she saw this and saw how simple it was and how, you know, it's plastic, inexpensive. If he can do it, why can't we? So that first meeting, she shared the cannula and the syringe. And the women, we were all just thinking, oh, women. Now, I had no idea what abortion was. I mean, I'd had D&Cs, I had read a lot, but I had no idea, you know, how sturdy our uteruses were. I, like a lot of women, I had this impression that our uterus is kind of like delicate, maybe marshmallow, got to be careful, oh my goodness, you're going to puncture, you know. All the things we're told to think in terms of. And, but the cannula is flexible, fancy. And so we were all involved with this. And then I realized, wait a minute, there's problems. I didn't like the fact that if more needed to be removed from the uterus, you have to disconnect the whole unit, empty the syringe, reconnect, and pull again. And I thought, my God, if we empty it, you leave the plunger out, put it back together again, push the plunger in, air is going to get into the system. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, you know. So I came home and put together a kit that took care of the buildup of suction in the bottle. The bottle would collect as much as we needed. There wouldn't be any jiggling in the uterus of the cannula, the thought device, when, you know, because you don't have to take apart anything.
How did you do that?
Well, again, I think as women, we have so much knowledge, so much experiences. We've seen so much. We've done so much from the time that we were little tiny kids that I just came home and I thought about, you know, what it was that I needed to do to improve on it. And I've had biology in school. Most of us do if we have high school biology or college biology. And I had a basic idea about, I mean, when you pull a plunger, you know the way the suction is going to go. And I went to the grocery store and I think I even had the canning jars at home. And it's just canning jars from a grocery store, Mason canning jars. And I got a rubber stopper that had two holes in it, and I got some tubing from a tropical fish store, and the stuff is available. Stuff available in hardware stores now, and I rammed the tubing into the two holes, and then on the one end, and then I got a syringe somewhere. At that time, the children's stores had 200cc, 300cc plastic syringes for children to play with. And I don't know where I got a 50cc syringe. Maybe I used the great big one. No, I think I had a 50cc. I got a 50cc somewhere. It could be that Al, because he does it in the biology department, he, you know, he could have also helped me get some of the plugs, probably. And then the cannula on the other end. And then I needed a valve. I needed something to control the airflow automatically. And in chemistry class, all kinds of valves that we use in hypotension. And I talked to Al about the valve. And I told him, you know, I know that there's an automatic valve. I've seen the automatic valve that will control in to out, in to out. And he helped me chase it down. It was plastic. And I went back the next week with the unit and demonstrated it was water. And it was all points go from there. And that's when the whole idea changed from, wait a minute, we're not talking about abortion. We're talking about using a smaller star-like device, even smaller, so there will be no dilation. Or just whatever dilation the cervix already is when we're early, either early pregnant, or we were doing it just to remove our periods. And let's, I mean, when we get pregnant, or when we suspect that our egg may have connected up with sperm, one of those times last month, we want our period. We want our period. That's what we're concerned about as women. So why not go after the period? On or about when we expect the period. And that's how the concept evolved. Menstrual extraction. And so I know we're now into the 60s with women's liberation. 70s rather. Mm-hmm. But I continued to work with Carol. And during 1971, during the spring of 71, we were doing all kinds of self-help. We were learning all kinds of things about abortion by talking with doctors. And by the summer of 1971, Carol and I traveled to Seattle, Washington, and went into a legal abortion clinic that used suction abortion, where the doctor trained lay women as teens to do suction D&C. And she and I were both trained to do suction D&Cs. And that completely demystified the whole picture of abortion to us.
Now, what was a suction D&C? Was like the first guy that he was doing?
Harvey Carman? No.
What is the case?
Suction, although I think the man Harvey worked with did a D&C. D&C is where they usually have to have an anesthetic because it's painful. They open the cervix muscle up, which hurts like hell. That's the muscle that dilates when we go into labor. And we know that that can be pretty rough. They open it wide enough to get in a metal instrument that has a double blade on it, like that, so that it goes in and it scrapes the walls, removing the endometrial lining, plus if there's pregnancy comes off with it, the placenta comes off with it, and it comes out.
Don't you say cannula? It's a small, but it just goes in
without. It just suctions it all out, pretty much all of it. Don't have to dilate, right?
Okay.
So suction D&C, it includes the D&C part, where you invariably dilate, and then you put the suction in to get everything else out. And some doctors D&C a little bit, then suction a lot. Some doctors like to suction a little bit, do D&C a lot. It just depends upon the doctor. So. But it demystified this whole thing of abortion for us, put it into perspective, mm-hmm. and helped us realize how they don't want us to know, and they give us such incorrect information about our bodies that we're scared to death to do anything, to either help ourselves or help each other.
So how did you feel when you were being trained
to do this? I didn't expect, first of all, to be trained. I knew we were going to watch, and I did not expect to be trained, and it came on it primarily. It was interesting. It came out mostly as a challenge that wasn't planned. After the first day or two of watching these women do these beautiful, gentle, non-traumatic procedures, one morning I said to the doctor while we were all having early morning, you know, breakfast, coffee, tea, whatever people were drinking and eating before the women were coming in for the services, I said to him, you know, I must tell you, I'm very, very impressed with the clinic. I'm very impressed with your services. I'm especially impressed with the women that you've trained, all the women who do such a gentle procedure. I had no idea that it could be so, you know, it could be this way for women. And I said, but, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I couldn't learn to do it. I couldn't do it. And that turned out to be a challenge for this macho doctor.
Right.
And he said, well, guess what? The next woman who comes in, you're going to do. And don't mean it. You don't mean it. There's no way. No. Don't worry. I'll be right at your shoulder. And that's exactly what happened. He talked me through it. I mean, what can I compare it to? I'll tell you what I can compare it to. If you've ever lived in a kitchen that has coving, the linoleum goes up the side of the wall underneath the cabinet, and you ever have to get on your hands and knees to clean the kitchen floor, and you can't see what's in the coving, but you know you've got to get in there to scrub it out, and after a while you know the shape of it, and you just work in it. That's exactly what it seemed to me. After a while, you just know the configurations of uteruses, even though our uteruses can all be different, and the positions can be different. Some women can have septums in the middle, deviated septums.